Hello, ladies and gentlemen of the internet. This is the Gaming to Start podcast for the 9th of December, 2025. My name's Callum.
My name's Ewan.
And this is the last podcast of the year.
Last of 2025, yep.
Before we go on break, because games are done. We're kind of done for the year.
Well, like...
there's not a lot else that's coming out.
By the time you hear this, games will have been done. Yes.
Why, what else is there? I can't think of what...
Skate Stories 9. That's the only one.
Oh,
that's the last one.
Sure, okay.
That's
right,
the last
one. That's the last
thing I care about.
Yeah, because I looked at my list over the weekend and there was one thing I still had to play and I played it and now I'm done. So I'm not.
I feel like there's like a bunch of other stuff that I've kind of gone, that looks interesting. But
There's probably like smaller stuff that I've been like stuff like FF Tactics Evil East Chronicles is like something that I will have to play at some point because I love that game. I've just not got to it this year, and it's not that important because it is still just FF
you know
Tactics.
What it is.
Like
yeah.
I know what that game is.
Exactly. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, but all the stuff that I wanted to have at least played and maybe not finished or whatever, I've done now. So yeah. I'm now.
I was very very quickly
where I want to be.
I was very quickly going to check my wish list, but I've then lost how Steam fucking works now. Steam wish list. But yes, yeah, so Skate Story is the 9th, and I feel like there was something else, but no, I think it's just that. I think everything else is next year now, which is, yeah, that's kind of where we are.
There was a couple of stuff this year that I like couldn't get round to, like VTM Bloodlines, never got round to that.
I never got to it either.
I look at Christmas sale, and if that's a reasonable price, I will do it.
Yep.
And we'll see what happens. But yeah, there was other stuff. There was that the Absolom game that looked really interesting that never got around
right
to. And
yeah, forgot about that. Yeah. Yep. And then this is all the stuff that came out. I meant to try that Simogo collection because I've never played.
But we've played the Simogo games though.
Yes, that's but the... I haven't played Your Walk. Four, which is one of I kind of.
Oh, really? Is
play.
That not what like people most people think is like the best one?
Yeah, I never played it because I never had an iPad at the time when it was.
Oh yeah,
available.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people talking about Ambrosia Sky, which I need to have a look at. There was something else. That was all of them. There's a bunch of smaller stuff. There's a game called Split, which is like a psychological horror hacking game, which looks interesting. It's like £2, but it seemed like an interesting thing. But yeah, like this is what I'm saying. Like for me, like it's been a lot of kind of catching up on stuff or like trying stuff that I feel like I should have. So like I started Indiana Jones, for instance. Game seems real good. Game's pretty impressive.
Like, game's pretty cool. Yeah, that game is the epitome of the joke of makes you feel like X. It's you are Indiana Jones. You have the weapon. You punch Nazis, and it's
it's really interesting the way that it's they've really doubled down on the like the things that make indie like the little puzzles and the little conversations and all that kind of stuff. I didn't realize how many names they had got for it, like big actors, like people just kept appearing, and they were just like, "Oh, it's you, huh? Okay." And I'm playing the PS5 version, and it runs real well. So,
Does it run well? Okay, that's good.
Yeah, it runs really well.
Obviously, Troy Baker does a great job.
Troy Baker does
pretending
a great job.
To be Harrison Ford. So that's
it was interesting though because we were sitting playing it. So Fiona had played a chunk of it, a good chunk of it. I think she'd got to Egypt or Gaza. I can't remember. So she knew the whole Vatican area at that point. And we were walking through it and it was like, what the fuck is this parrot noise that keeps happening there? Like, she didn't recognize what that was. And we're hunting around and we found the parrot and it's like, you click on the guy with his parrot and it brings up the thing that's like, hey, DLC's out. here's how you get into it. They just added it into the Vatican. Like, it's a...
Sure, got you.
Which, and I was like, okay, that's fair enough. So yeah, I'll be plugging away at that over Christmas. It seems pretty good. There was that. There was... It's a very, very quick mention. I played a demo for a game called Jitter, which is a like monochrome kind of Game Boy color palette, pixel art, space puzzle slash platformer kind of.
Okay.
So it's like it's kind of like a spaceship management thing where you've got to manage like power and oxygen and all that kind of stuff. But at any point you can open up, they can take the top off your ship and like manipulate like individual doors and like reroute power and all this kind of stuff into it. But you can also attach yourself to different modules to or like to make your ship bigger or to pull people in or do all this kind of stuff. But it's like a linear story. It's not like an open world thing. So it's about like using all of these tools to solve these problems and do all that kind of stuff. It seems super interesting. The demo was pretty good. It's kind of hard to explain, but once you see it, you're like, ah, okay, cool.
Sure.
Yeah, it's called Jitter. It seems pretty good. But yeah, one of the other things I wanted to spend time on, I had been thinking about it for a while anyway, and then I found that they had announced the big redo of Phantom Brigade.
I remember you talking about this.
We have a video on it. It is a...
Yeah. That's a while ago, wasn't it? That game came out?
It was about last year, like a year and a half maybe ago. For people who haven't seen it, Phantom Brigade is like a turn-based tactics game with an overworld kind of XCOM-y, except that rather than it being turn-based, it is turn-based, but you have 5 seconds of time that you can plan out. And you basically put stuff on a timeline. So like you drag like a move bar between like the first 3 seconds, and then you shoot at second three and all this kind of stuff. But it's very, very granular. But also on top of that, you can predict the next 5 seconds of enemy movement, so you know where they're gonna go, so you can then work out and you have an advantage over them because you know roughly where they're gonna go, but you can only see 5 seconds, so it kinda becomes a whole thing. So they put out like basically, I mean, it's called Phantom Brigade 2.0. Like, they revamped a bunch of stuff. They revamped the overworld, they revamped the mission structure, they revamped a whole bunch of stuff. The mech building is way more usable. They added like pilots as a concept. Like, pilots used to be kind of like named, but that was kind of it. But now they have like a trait system that you can unlock. They have like they level up and gain skills, and then once they reach the top of their skills, they prestige and go back down to zero, keep a skill, but then get better skills next time. And the whole system in there. And again, it reinforces this thing that I've come across where games like this, I think the best way for me to play games like this, and I include, I know they're not 100% similar, but like this and Ixion and that kind of stuff, where it's these kind of genres that are traditionally very kind of open, like you just kind of go from start to finish and it's like a 60-hour campaign or whatever it is. These games that have like story chapters where it's like, okay, we're doing this bit and then that's chapter one and then this is chapter two. The way that Phantom Brigade is now structured is it's basically like a set of like regions that like each region is its own kind of like chapter that you can then complete, and then you move on, and it's like this tree-based like world map, and you don't seem to go backwards, so you're always making forward progress. That's like small enough chunks where like you can kind of settle on stuff, and you can't fuck up bad enough where you have to restart the whole thing again, like you would in like an XCOM or something like that.
Sure.
Okay. And like Ixion is really good for that, cause, like it's chapter-based stuff.
But like the regions are like individual. Like,
yes, every individual,
They're not linked, and it's not like open or whatever.
No. Yeah, you move from one region to another, and each region is a kind of big chunk of space that has its own structure and like stuff.
Yeah.
Like one of the regions that you go through, the second or third region you go through is like, hey, this convoy has a bunch of really important stuff, you need to chase it down. So this kind of convoy is like kind of snaking its way through the region, and you have to like shortcut it while avoiding patrols to then do the big fight where you actually hit the convoy and stuff like that. It's really good. It's really enjoying what that game's doing now, and it's it's just better in basically every way than it was before.
That's good.
And it wasn't bad to before. I just didn't put the time in that I really get it. But now it's like it's really.
Good. It's more of the I guess it's like always a risk, right? When they do like full redesigns like this,
yeah.
That no, it goes wrong.
No, and, they've pulled off for sure. It's way more. That's good. Way better now. There's a great video on my Blue Sky that I took of it, where I'd forgotten that one of the big things about this one is that all the mechs are like physically modeled, so that if you collide two mechs together, like it takes into account like the weight of the mech to see who remains standing and who like gets yeeted. And there's a great video that I shot from the ground where there's like an enemy mech that comes at that's there and it's kind of jumps out and then like blasts a little bit, and then one of my mechs, the shield, just bursts out of the forest and just knocks it to the side as it runs past.
I remember this in the video of you running into people.
It's so funny.
Yeah,
it's so good. And it becomes a viable tactic as well, and they do a really good job of like, because one of the things always with tactics games like this where like characters are, or where your units are like characters that you want to keep around, it's about taking the risk of like, no, we actually just need to do this sacrifice. Like, we actually might just need to push you this little bit harder and you might die here, but it's worth it for the mission. It does that really well. It has a really nice system for like pushing your guys a little bit harder and like with increased risk. And then also it's got this trauma system, basically, where if one of your pilots gets knocked out or like gets a severe injury, they get a trauma point, and at 3 trauma points they will die the next time they take a trauma. And so it's one of those things, it's like, okay, you've had some work, but you can still go back in, and then when you get to the 3rd trauma point, you're like, this is going to be dicey, but I really do need your expertise in this mission to really do the thing. It's pretty good for that. So there's all of that, and then the last thing, the biggest thing, and like, in speaking of games that are like coming out for the end of the year, I've played a couple hours of Routine now. I played it just last night, actually, because I hadn't really had a chance to get it. So Routine is a game that's been development, depending on how you look at it, somewhere.
It's this thing. Okay.
Somewhere between 5 and 13 years, depending on how you really classify it. Like, it got announced, like, I sent you the trailer to remind you what it was, and it said like coming 2013 originally. But basically what happened is like they started building it, they weren't happy with the way it was progressing, and they'd run out of funding, or they didn't have the means to be able to continue development. So they kind of put it on hold, did a bunch of other projects, and then when they signed on one of their other projects to Raw Fury, who published their last one, they were like, oh, you're the Routine people. We really fucking want Routine. So it's basically been about the stuff that's out now is like 4 or 5 years worth of work. Started in Unreal Engine 4 and is now in UE5. They ported that in 2022. It is a sci-fi horror, first person sci-fi horror game is the cleanest description of what this thing is. It's very Alien Isolation in terms of structure and kind of feel, but it is doing enough of its own stuff that I think it's actually super interesting. So I also can't really tell you a story because I don't really know what, like, it's rolling it out pretty slowly.
As you say,
you've
not got it in yet.
It's rolling it out pretty slowly, but you're basically on a moon base called, I think it's called Union Square, I think it's called. It's the name of this lunar base. And they haven't really said what's going on, but you've woken up from this, you basically wake up from this bad dream in a half of a spacesuit. You have to put on your pressurized helmet and you print out an ID badge and you have to go out and fix the security system, basically. But there ain't anybody on this station and it looks like something real bad went down. So I mean, mechanically, it does feel like Alien Isolation. There are things that prowl the station. I'll get to how you defend yourself in a second, but like, it is very much about like hiding and ducking and like keeping out of their way until you can, as you go around and do the stuff that you need to do. It's got this, so you know, like Alien has this like 80s aesthetic, even when they're doing modern games, like they keep the aesthetic from the 80s.
Oh yeah,
it's the original
Alien, like, yeah, 70s. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, it's all like kind of CRT monitors, like, and the white paneling 80s. And yeah.
So Routine does that, but does like late 80s, and it does it in a really interesting way. I sort of referred to it as like cassette retro. Where it's like,
sure,
it's like late 80s, where like your like orientation slides that you see have that kind of like jazz font, you know, like the kind of blue swishes and the triangles and spirals, like the kind of start of Saved by the Bell, like that kind of thing.
Oh, I got you, right, okay, so I understand.
It's that stuff, and it's definitely, and all the screens are, they're full color, but they're CRTs. And like have a very kind of like early Mac OS kind of aesthetic. But the main thing that you have, and one of the things that kind of stood out during a lot of the preview stuff, and it's even originally, it's really interesting to see the same concepts from 2013 that are still kind of there, but in different forms. You have this thing called the CAT, which is the Cosmonaut Assistance Tool, which basically kind of looks like a kind of like police radar gun, kind of, mixed with a expensive at the time 80s camcorder, like kind of aesthetically. But you have this thing and you press Y and they pull it up in front of their faces, and you can like click buttons on the CAT itself. So like the on off button is a thing that you can press, and it turns the thing on and off.
Okay. Sure.
And it's all this very tactile like manipulation of the CAT on the thing. So at some point you get like an extra tool module for the CAT, and it like pops open like you're putting a cassette in, and like to switch modes, you have to slide the top of the thing back to switch between like Gauss mode and tool mode and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, this sounds like Alien Isolation again, where it was like the save stuff was very physical. You had to run up and like pull a thing and hold it, and like it was supposed to be like in the world to make it a bit more panicking.
So one of the save stuff. So one of the things you can do as well is any of the screens in the world are projected onto the wall. One of the buttons on your CAT is a wireless access button. If you press that in front of one of these like projected wall screens, it connects your CAT to the screen, so you can manipulate. Like, that's how you get your PDA, and that's how you get your task list and all that kind of stuff in there. And also, that's where you get your save point. And the time between you pressing that button and it coming up is a good 4 or 5 seconds before it actually appears, so you can't really do it under duress. So it's got that whole thing from Alien Isolation in there as well. But yeah, so there's that. So that makes it really interesting as well. Like, just that whole like kind of physicality of the CAT and how you use it and all this kind of stuff. And there's stuff in there I won't spoil about how it gets manipulated and all that kind of stuff, but there's all that kind of stuff. And then yes, you are getting hunted or tracked, or like there are things out the world that can hurt you that you kind of want to keep back from. But also, like, the game looks incredible. Like, it's UE5, so it kind of has a baseline of looking pretty good.
Oh really? Okay.
Something about the level of detail in it, and again, it's a really smart decision to do games like this in stuff like space stations, and especially like corporate space stations, because like you see a lot of like the same fire extinguisher, because of course you would,
like, yeah, and it's regulations say
exactly.
So
that's the, and it lets them kind of reuse some stuff and like have this kind of like consistent stuff all the way around. But yeah, it seems really good. It got me a good couple of times now in terms of like scares, and it's just really cool. Like, I cannot you have to see the aesthetic stuff for yourself. Like, it looks absolutely incredible. And it seems like they're doing some interesting stuff with it that I'm not, like I say, I'm only a couple hours in. It doesn't seem too long. Like, I got to chapter 2 last night and stopped. There's like 6 chapters, I think. So it doesn't seem hugely long. But yeah, it's, if you're an Alien Isolation fan, like, it's well worth having a look at. I was hoping for more Soma, but there's less story than I would say for it to be Soma, but it's kind of got some of that there as well. There seems
good company
like,
to be in.
That's... Yeah. There seems like there's a computer that's kind of annoyed. So, like, that's kind of Soma-esque.
Sure. That was a lot of the characters in Soma, yeah.
But yeah, routine seems real awesome. And I need to plug away the rest of it. But yeah, it's kind of that. And like I say, Skate Story's out in the 9th, which I think is the last thing that I'm really caring about for this year. And there's a couple of smaller things I'll probably plug away at over December. I think that's kind of everything. I mean, we both also finished Dispatch since it came out.
Yeah, we did.
Seems like we had very different endings, but
I don't know how, but yeah, that seems like
I looked up some stuff and it takes some there's some stuff in there, but what a game, what a cool thing, that does
a fantastic little thing, yeah,
that, like, the more you hear the developers talk about it, the more you're like, this almost didn't happen like 7 times or something like that, like,
it's, yeah,
and like, yeah. And it seems like it's hit mainstream in a way that I would never have expected. Like, it's, I mean, we talked a little bit about this last time when we were, when we'd only just started it, but like, the way that they got, I think the voice talent they got on kind of did a lot of that, right? Where,
yeah,
like, on top of it being like a really good game and all the voice talent being really good in it, like, they had a bunch of names in there that would pull in a bunch of people who maybe wouldn't get something like this, and they're like, oh, like, this person's in it, or this person's in it, and like, which maybe got some of the interest in it. But like, that game sold, like, it did their year's worth of expected sales in like a month and a half or something like that. Like, it was,
oh really?
Oh yeah,
how much did it sell? I just remember, it's like, was it 5 million or 2 million
something
or something
huge.
Like that?
Way more than they expected anyway.
It's just like, I think it's a game that's a lot more approachable, right? Because it is largely just a TV show with some interactivity in it.
Yeah.
But it's very approachable, and it's in the style of like a Netflix series, so it's more familiar. I get it. It's in it, but it wouldn't have worked had it not had the level of writing and work behind it that it has. So it's very well done. It's an excellent game.
And I've watched a couple other like streamers and stuff play through chunks of it as well, and like, I'm seeing lines I've never seen before. Like, not even just stuff that's like choices I didn't make, but like series of choices that I didn't make that lead you into various things, and like stuff like that. This is not going to mean anything to anyone, so I can say it, but like, telling Phenomenon that you kissed Blazer is a scene I never saw. Yep. Fucking so funny. Like, that kind of stuff. It's really good.
The interesting thing that I saw... Mm-hmm. Which I saw devs talk, I don't know if you saw the story or it's in like news or something like that, but I was really interested in it, was the developers figuring out why there's a disparity in the romance options.
No, I didn't
because
see
this. Because it's like, so if you look at it, they looked at it and they said that the statistics, it was like 60-40 like or 70-30 in favor of Vivizigal.
Yep.
But when they did it for testing internally, it was always 50-50.
Really?
And like,
okay.
So they looked at it like, we can't explain this, because when we did it, it was straight, and we expected it to be like a flat 50-50, because obviously the internet has opinions and all
that stuff.
And they were expecting it, but it wasn't. It was like 60-40.
Yeah.
So they were like, why the hell? So they asked people, and they were like, why is that? And the thing that apparently came up the most was the scene in episode 1 where... you're interacting with, or 2 or whenever it is, you're interacting with Blazer, and Phenomenon turns up and it turns out she's in a relationship.
Yes.
Apparently, to most of the general public, that made them go, oh, okay, cool, I'll not touch that then.
Sure.
And then that was it done for them, but for the people that were in testing, apparently they were okay with that. So it is this like weird bending of statistics around people that, it's not selection bias, but it is like a group bias of that specific group of people apparently were just fine with it.
Yeah.
But the general public were not. That's so really, it was this. It's really very funny. Interesting, but yeah,
I like that.
It was cool.
There's probably a bunch of stories in like all the statistic stuff that, like, I need to go back and look at them because I assume those statistics adjust over time. If you go back and look at them,
I would guess. Yeah, that would be the.
So I need to go back and look at them and see what it was, because definitely when I saw a couple of people playing stuff, there was some of them that were like 3%. And I'm like, no, this game's been out for long enough where like 3% does not make sense for a decision like this.
Yeah,
like,
I remember the one. Yeah,
Yeah, like I saw somebody playing it. It was like you and 0% of people. It's like, am I the only one that did this? This doesn't make any sense.
I think zero just means lower than one, lower than one.
Still,
means,
like,
yeah.
For what it was, doesn't make sense. But what a cool thing. And like they've really set them up. Two things that really came out of it for me. One is that they've set themselves up as like a studio that can do something like this. And
yeah, for sure.
It shows that that kind of stuff is still alive and well. And that's outside of Telltale, I mean. And the other part of it is like, yes, fucking companies, there are still room out there for like single player narrative story games. Yep. Stop. Like, let people make this shit.
I think that it's accepted at this point that the people saying that were aware that they're wrong. Like, it's stuff like Dispatch and stuff like Exposition 33 shows that not only is there space for this, but people actively want it. Yeah. So it's not,
and they can be big, right? Like,
they can be big.
It'd be interesting to know what the budget for something like a Dispatch is compared to other game, because there's not really. I was going to say other games of its type, but there aren't a huge amount of them like these days. So like, how does that compare to like a AA project of some kind? Like, is this a more viable, like less risky proposition that you don't have to build to the same level of stuff? You don't need full 3D interactive. Like, you're still doing, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like the budget of that kind of stuff might be more comprehensible. But yeah, I'm just glad. I'm glad it exists, and I'm really interested to see what the fuck they do. Like, a season two makes a lot of sense.
I hope that they either do a season two, but then also I don't know how you do a season two given the breadth of the options that you had. Like, that's
true.
This was always the thing. Or they do something else. Like, yeah,
they'd have to pull your save in. And
well, that's what I mean. But there's so many options for this thing. That like it's not like. Or I don't think it's like Walking Dead, where it was like there were like two or three big ones that you're like, oh, these are the stop
there's
points.
A bunch of variations.
It feels like there's variations within the endings that could have pretty big dramatic consequences.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's
don't know, but yeah, it's interesting that but I'm glad that they exist, and I'm glad that they can they can establish themselves, and they've got some resources under them to be able to go out and do stuff like that again.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I think that's everything from me, really. What about yourself?
So the two small things before I get into the big thing are I played a few hours of Citizen Sleeper 2.
Oh yes.
We don't have to go into it because obviously you went through it when you played it at first. That game is more Citizen Sleeper.
Yep.
It's still sounds amazing, looks amazing,
yep,
very well written, yep, like the stuff you'd expect from that game. I personally think it's a bit too much. Yeah. I think that I had a conversation with someone else who's played it, mm-hmm, and they felt the same as me,
sure,
as well.
Yeah.
Where it's like, Citizen Sleeper 1 was tense and not super complicated, but it was very tense and it was very personal.
Yes.
This is very tense, but mechanic quite heavy. There's a lot of things
to
manage.
There's a lot of things going on. Yeah.
And I feel like it's like one or two too many.
Sure.
Instead of it feeling like, oh shit, this is stressful, to it being like, this feels unfair.
Yeah.
Like I get it, when you do a sequel, you want to do bigger and more, but sometimes you need to temper it. But I don't know. I was impressed with the stuff that I wanted to be impressed by. It was just actively playing it. I was like, there's a bit too much here.
Yeah,
like, I wanted
totally.
It to be a bit more focused and smaller scale. And
I can see that for sure. yeah, I think when we were talking about it, I was saying, like, for me, that felt... The problem, not the problem with the first game, but one of the things about the first game was, like, by about halfway through, you kind of... The resource restriction part of it kind of went away. Like, you kind of solved that, basically. And then from there, you were just kind of, like, going through the story. I think for two, the layers of... The number of mechanics in it mean that, like, yeah, bad stuff is still going to fucking happen. And it's going to be, like, it still manages to kick you in ways that you don't expect in a kind of realistic way, right? In that, like, oh, shit, like, there's just no way this is going to happen. Like, we are just fucked. And the way that they manage to roll that stuff into story and the writing and the progression and all that kind of stuff. But, like, yeah, like, I failed a bunch of missions, which is a thing you... like, obviously you try and avoid, but, like, I specifically try and, like, I'll just reload or, like, try this again. It was like, no, like, this felt thematically right to me.
So I get that it's thematic, and I get it's supposed to be a struggle and stuff like that, but it's like...
It's a lot. It is a lot.
There's a lot, and there's situations where it feels like the game is... Well, the game is sort of always supposed to be against you because it is supposed to apply this pressure, but there's this thing where there's, like, so many systems layering on top of itself that it feels like the game is restricting you. I was talking to my friend last night where it was like they were in a situation where they ended up with like no money, no fuel, no supplies, but they had to make it back somewhere.
Yep.
And there's like there's not a lot you can do in that situation. Yeah, like you're just fucked at that point.
Yep.
And like a game like this, I feel like shouldn't having a dead end is bad because it's like it's at its core, it's a narrative game. Like you want to see the story, so it's. And the things like that I was talking to you about, and I was talking to them about, where it's like there are situations in that game where, based on dice roll, you can just end up getting screwed over to a situation where you end up with your dice pool being like break glitch 1-1.
Yep.
And you're like, there's nothing I can do with that. Like I can't do anything. You could get lucky, sure, because it's a dice roll, but like 80% of the time, you're getting nothing out of those dice. Like, and that's. In a game where you just want to, in a game where it's like, I like these cool mechanics, that's fun and everything like that, but I just want to see your cool writing and art and music and stuff like that. It's not letting me do it because it wants to do all this other stuff.
Absolutely. I can totally see that.
I get it. I get what they're doing, but it doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah, totally.
It's not what I want out of that game.
Yep.
Totally. Played a few hours of that Are We There Yet game with some friends because I had spare Steam money from selling Counter-Strike crates and
we need to come back to that in a second, but continue.
Well, it's literally just because of the gambling thing that got introduced into Counter-Strike, which I assume you saw.
Yeah.
The price of crates all went up astronomically, so because people just want anything to put into the gambling. Mm-hmm. So my friend said, hey, by the way, if you've got Counter-Strike crates, go look because they'll have like doubled or tripled in price. So I sold all my fucking old CS crates that I had lying around and made like 40 quid.
How much CS have you played? Like which one was it? LGO was it?
So I played Go for a bit. I can't actually, let me look. Hang on, I can find this. But,
okay.
Like the game is not like stingy about giving you crates.
Oh, okay.
So it's not, I played it for like 80 hours. Yeah.
Wow.
Stuff like that. I had a couple of friends who were big Counter-Strike players.
Fair enough. I just didn't know.
And made like 40 quid and I bought, what did I buy for 20? I bought that Fellowship game for 20 quid. So I had some money left over. So I was like, this is like 6 quid.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that game's exactly what it looks like. Yep. It's a game that's fun to play with your friends for a bit. The funniest thing about that game is, well, other than you interacting with friends and like dumb shit you can do in it, is that you're actively incentivized to at all times be smoking and drinking.
Yep.
And it's really, really funny that the one thing we pointed out at all times was if someone was doing something and they didn't have a cigarette in their mouth, you were like, hang on a minute, you need to start smoking right now.
Everyone needs to be always smoking. Yep.
Everyone needs to smoke. Everyone needs to drink. It's a dumb game. It's janky as fuck.
Just
but it's,
four of these like dumpy characters running around smoking with berets on, and it's just like it's such a great visual.
your character is so small and so dumpy they can't even get on the RV. Right? You have to like jump at an angle to get on the thing, and it's
great.
Dumb game. It's really funny, but it's dumb. Yep. It's a dumb game.
Yep.
Main thing to talk about is it's that time of year where we talk about Destiny expansion.
Right. Actually, very quickly before you get into that, did you play any of that Guild Wars thing that came out?
No, Reforged? No, I've not.
Okay. But it is out, right?
I would say, it's out, and it is. They had like 6,000 concurrent players, and that made my heart go all warm. It was like, oh, these people want to play my old game.
Yeah, there's still people here. Yeah.
I would say that it was going to be the game that I play over Christmas, but the new Final Fantasy patch comes out in like 2 weeks or something like that, so I'll have to play that to get ready for the raid in next year and stuff.
Yep.
I'll see what happens over Christmas. So Renegades, Destiny 2 expansion, yes. Star Wars.
No, definitely not Star Wars.
Well, it's a Lucasfilms thing. Like it's a partnership. It's a Star Wars thing, but it's not Star Wars.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Renegades. This is the newest. They don't call it an expansion anymore. They call it I can't remember. It's not a season and it's not an expansion. It's something else. I can't remember what it is. But second one in their new system that started with Edge of Fate focuses around at the end of Edge of Fate, after the ending of Edge of Fate, the Drifter gets given a vision, a horrible portent of like him doing something and everybody dying. So like him and Eris, who is like now his like girlfriend dies and like all this stuff, and he's like, I need to go stop this. The vision told me where to go. I'm gonna go there. And you basically follow him because you get a message from him being like, hey, I've turned up at this place and there's this new division of the Cabal that are trying to like rise in power and take over, and we need to stop them. Believe it or not, it's all Cabal in white armor, and the main guy that's at the head of it looks like Darth Vader. So it's So this is a Star Wars inspired content drop.
Right.
This is part of their like official thing with Lucas, because they've got like official armor sets that are in the game that are like Royal Guards and Darth Vader and Mandalorian stuff and all that. This is now they're doing a Destiny story, but it's styled after Star Wars. And it is really fucking styled after Star Wars. Yeah. The opening cutscene is literally the opening cutscene from A New Hope. It's the Drifter flying away from a Cabal ship and doing the like shooting at it and the tractor beam and all that stuff. He gets put in carbonite at some point, but it's actually stasis. I played through the whole thing. Me and my friend, who's also a big Star Wars nerd, played through the whole thing, me playing it and streaming to her. And every like 10 minutes you're pointing at a thing being like, it's the thing, it's the bit, you're doing the thing from Endor,
it's a really interesting way to take it, right? Like, it's like inspired by is such a, but also partnership, like, because like people have been putting lightsabers in games forever and saying they're not lightsabers, right? But this is like a like an officially sanctioned
The thing that you get by it being officially sanctioned by Lucas is they let you use the noises. So it's a lightsaber that sounds exactly like a lightsaber.
Gotcha.
It's blasters that sound exactly like an E11 or whatever.
Okay.
Like it's that. You get that, and you get to be able to, I guess, mimic what they did and be like, look, it's this new thing. So the styling of the Star Wars stuff is in the sort of dressing. It's in like the cutscenes are bits from Star Wars. You do things that are bits from Star Wars. The guns are styled after Star Wars guns. There's like Han Solo's DL-55 that's a hand cannon. There's Andor's gun. There's Leia's gun and all that stuff. But they are Destiny weapons. They are still they have the roles and stuff like that. They're all under a new weapon style. They're all blasters, so they don't reload. It's all about like heat management and stuff like that.
Okay. Sure.
So that it's an entirely new weapon archetype, and they seem to have done the thing. I don't know if this is on purpose, but this is like a suspected thing that people do when your game's not doing very well, which is you release a new thing that has a bunch of stuff in it that's like very much better than everything,
right?
To then FOMO people to get them to come back to the game.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the weapons that are in this are very, very good. Like incredibly good.
Okay.
Especially because the heat system you don't have, because you don't have to actively reload. You can do like a manual vent to like stop the heat or whatever. Mm. But if you just put the gun away, it discharges in your pocket. So it's basically every gun that you get that's a blaster has free auto reloads on them. So you can do some wild stuff where it's like dispensing heat in your pocket while you're doing something else and you're pulling it out. And yeah, it's crazy. The guns are very, very good, but obviously styled after Star Wars. Obviously there's a lightsaber now. It's all the head of the Cabal, which is the Baronet Imperium is the name of the new one, is Darth Vader. It has the chest plate and the mask and everything like that. There's a guy that's Kylo Ren, who is like the new, they've styled him like he's going to be a new, not major villain, but he's like, he survived at the end of the story and is like going to come back, obviously, called Dredgen Bail, who is the guy in the, if you've seen the promo material, like the red leather jacket mask.
I'm looking at
That's Dredgen Bail. The whole story kind of revolves around the fact that this guy has now turned up and has taken the name Dredgen, which is like in Destiny lore, those are the bad, the light bearers that basically go and be evil and try and kill other light bearers.
Right.
They're the bad people. The Drifter was a Dredgen at one point and turned his back on it. The whole story revolves around Dredgen Bail turning up and being like, I'm a Dredgen, like, it's time for the age of like light bearers being the guardians of humanity to stop. And so he tries the entire time to get the Drifter back on his side by being like, you're a Dredgen, you need to come and help us and stuff. Story, the thing that this expansion did really well that Edge of Fate didn't is that the campaign is really good, the actual missions that are in the campaign are great, story's great, really well acted, music's amazing, really fun set pieces. Like, they've gone back to what Destiny was before Edge of Fate, where all the campaign missions are great again, which is fantastic. It's really, really good. So funny about the fucking music, because so they got the original Destiny composer who they fired when they were getting rid of a bunch of people.
Okay.
They got him back and then were like, we're doing this Star Wars set, so your music kind of has to be a bit John Williams-y and sound a bit like Star Wars. And what they took that to mean was, oh, it's the trumpets. Like, that's what the Star Wars music is. It's the trumpets and it's like the long shot. So the music is like, it's not Star Wars, but then the trumpet kicks in and you're like, oh no, I see what you're doing here. Like, this is it's the joke. But it's very, very good. Like, the music's excellent, but it is like, you get the joke very, very quickly. The campaign was really, really fun. Like, it was a really enjoyable few missions that were so very Star Wars, it was unbelievable. Spoilers for the end of the campaign if you've not done it yet, but it's not very long, and I assume the people that care have done it.
I would have done it.
The end of that game is a mashup between doing a trench run on a Sparrow and the end of Halo 1. You know, when you're like escaping Warthog? It's that. So you do like a fake fake trench run to blow up the center of their big super weapon spaceship. That is like, instead of it being like a planet destroyer, it has like a big beam that basically kills anyone who has the light. It's insane. It's a crazy weapon, but whatever. You go in and you blow it up and then you do the escape. It's really, really funny. They get pretty crazy and bombastic with it. It's fun. So it's you and the Drifter, and basically the Drifter makes his own fire team of renegades, quote unquote.
Yep.
And it's like you and Eris, an idol who's like the Elixni from one of the seasons before, who's just like a bright-eyed scientist type, and this new woman who's a Praxic warlock called Arnor, who is, she looks fucking cool. She looks amazing. Where it's like, it's the, she's got the old, not Old Republic, the Clone Wars style Jedi stuff, where it's like robes, but you have the armored bits on your arms and stuff. She looks awesome, and I want my warlock to look like that, but they won't give me armor that makes me look like that. So I'm hoping that like the dungeon has that maybe, or gives me robes or something. But
I'm looking at the screenshots on the website, and I was like, that sure looks like a Sarlacc pit.
So one of the first missions of the campaign is, because it's like the area that you end up in is called like the Lawless Frontier, and it's supposed to be kind of like every Outer Rim planet in Star Wars where it's like all the syndicates are fighting over territory.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So it's like there's a Cabal syndicate and a Vex syndicate and an Alexany syndicate that are all different and they're fighting over territory. The main mechanic of the game is that you go out and you're supposed to be doing stuff outside of the purview of the Last City and the and Zavala and all that stuff. So you do smuggling jobs and bounty hunting jobs for these syndicates to get reputation and all that stuff. It's about building your reputation in the Lawless Frontier. One of the first missions you do is that Spider is on this planet as well, because of course he is. He's basically Jabba the Hutt, because he turns up and is like, oh, you need to go defend my new boat. I've built this new boat, and you turn up and it's Jabba's skiff. Like, it's just
great.
Jabba's skiff.
Yeah, great.
It's over the Sarlacc pit, and you're like, ah, we get it. It's funny. He says it's like built out of old catches and like stuff. It was very funny. It's a good good joke. There's a lot of stuff that you point at, and you're like, ah, I get it. It's a funny joke.
Yep.
Mechanically, the way that it works now is that the Lawless Frontier jobs are kind of like the thing that you do. That's your main thing for the season. So you go out and you do these jobs and you get loot. That's it. The unique thing about it is that it's... So the way the jobs work is like you do two or three little objectives to get to your big objective, and then you call for like exfil. So someone has to come and pick you up and stuff. So it's like a defend the point and stuff. It's fine. I think there's like one too many objectives because it takes a bit too long, but it's like fine. If you go higher in difficulty, you get the opportunity for invasions like Gambit, how Gambit worked. So if you're, I think it's 300 power and above, and you're doing the missions at 300 or 400 power, people can put down a unique resource and say, I want to invade on someone doing this.
Yeah.
And they will turn up and they can get a certain number of kills and get benefits based on the kills and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you end up in a Gambit-like situation, which means the good and bad points about invading in Gambit are now back, where it's not as bad as it was in Gambit, where in Gambit it was like predictable and you knew it was going to happen and it actively set you back when you were getting invaded. This, the invader and the people doing the mission are doing two different things and they don't affect each other. It's just time and resources, that's about it, which is better, because you're not, it's not like if the invader turns up you're not going to do the thing that you want to do. You're still going to complete it. It's just that they get a benefit and it wastes some of your resource. It wastes some of your life credits. But the bad points about it are exactly the same things that were bad about invading in Gambit, where either two things happen. Either the people that are doing the mission know exactly where the invader spawns are and are standing on top of you the second you invade, ready to just kill you instantly, or are on the other side of the map with like a sniper rifle ready to just walk, wait till you walk around the corner and one shot you. The new, there's like a heavy sniper rifle that's supposed to be like a cycler rifle from Star Wars. That is like, because it's a heavy sniper rifle, does an insane amount of damage. So people are just like standing waiting with a sniper, a cycler rifle.
Yeah.
And the second they see you, you're just like dead, done. Cool. That's it. Okay. Or the invader is way overpowered and kills everybody really instantly and then leaves. So it's that's kind of the issue. The one of the issues that it seems to be the main point of contention about the invading thing is that you have a new thing in the Lawless Frontier called a Renegade ability, because the Lawless Frontier doesn't work the same way as other destinations where you don't like respawn health. Right. You have to like find it and it's all about like scrounging and scavenging because you're a renegade.
Of course, yeah.
But you have these abilities that are stuff that you can like call in and summon, where it's like an airstrike, or you can summon like a Cabal dropship to like squash a whole bunch of guys. There's one that is you summon a drone that gives you health back. It's like a healing drone.
Sure.
But if you level it up all the way, it gives you grenade energy and ability energy, and most importantly, super energy.
Right.
So what people have been doing is the second they start invading, they call the revitalize thing, get their super back, and walk at you with their super fully charged, throw it, get a couple of kills, do it again, get their super back, throw it, and it's like I think it's if the invader gets to 6 kills, they're done. That's it.
Right.
So they can just super the entire team, kill people, do it, super the entire team, kill people, and that's it.
Right.
Again, yeah, it's I guess it's to stop the invader always being there, and then you wouldn't get anything done.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just a bit dumb and overpowered. And one of the things you can call down if you get later in reputation with one of them, you get to call down basically an AT-ST for free.
Nice.
And that thing is really well armored and has quite good guns. So if you have an invader walking at you in an AT-ST, you're kind of like, great, what the fuck do we do about this? Like, it's kind of hard to deal with.
Yeah.
See, again, seems a bit invader tilted, which was kind of always the problem with Gambit, and they never fixed it. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But other than that, lightsaber, key point, lightsaber.
Yeah.
It's the most customizable exotic that's been in the game. You can change like the color and the core and the hilt and like whatever, and it actively changes how the thing works in the game,
right,
which is really, really cool because you can customize it however you want. The mission to get it, the exotic mission, is really cool. I liked it a lot. It reminded me a lot of the Prophecy Dungeon, because the Prophecy Dungeon that I really liked was like the theming around it was supposed to be you asking the Nine what's the difference between the light and the dark, and then basically explaining to you there is no difference, it's just about intention. This is the same thing, but you are basically trialed by the Praxic Order, which are like an order of warlocks that care about like justice and order and that stuff in the world. And you're basically asked to, instead of what they would normally do, which is like try and show that a person is worthy by being full of light and therefore full of justice, quote unquote, because you're you and you're obviously attuned to both light and dark and have saved the world, they're like, let's at least show that you are in balance. Mm-hmm. So the whole dungeon exotic mission is supposed to be about showing the balance between the light and the dark, and there's mechanics around that stuff. It's really, really fun. It's a fun little like 15-minute exotic mission, and at the end you get a lightsaber. So fun to use. It's like easily the most fun sword that you can use in the game. You can throw it and it bounces between targets. You have the deflection thing that bounces blasts back at enemies. It's the first time that deflections actually mattered in the game. You get other things that deflect shots, but the damage doesn't do anything. This actively kills people when you deflect. It has its own little three-hit combo that's really, really good. Just a super fun, just a really, really fun thing to have.
Is there going to be any reason to have any other sword at that point?
Because there are swords that have like unique trait combinations that would do specific stuff or whatever. It's not like a be-all and end-all of sword. It would definitely be a situation where, so there's the exotic sword. This is a complicated interaction, but go with me. There's an exotic sword that was in the final expansion from the last thing that I can't remember the name of.
Yep.
The one with you kill the witness, that one.
Yeah, yeah.
There's an exotic sword in that that basically has random traits that you can get based on what it rolls with. It's called Ergo Sum. One of the things that you can get on the sword is the same exotic trait as Galahorn, which is like, if someone fires Galahorn, it means that if you use a rocket launcher, that rocket launcher also fires the small rockets from Galahorn.
Yep, yep.
The sword, Ergo Sum, if it has Wolfpack rounds on it, which is the name of the thing, it applies that to swords. So there is a potential situation where if someone has a Wolfpack round Ergo Sum and everybody else has lightsabers,
right,
you're getting lightsabers that make rockets that kill stuff and stuff. There's a world where that's a thing. So
weird.
You don't have to use a lightsaber. There are other swords that have other things that you want that you could do. It depends on the situation.
For
general use, lightsaber seems great because it has ad clear, it has single target damage, it has defense. It seems ideal for general use.
Yep.
Obviously, everybody, when you see the lightsaber, is like, how the fuck do you get different colors? Because everybody wants their unique color for lightsaber. They seem to have done the right thing, which has split them between you can pay money for this and you can earn this in-game.
Right.
A lot of the colors are earn in-game. There's three that you can only get by buying, which is fine by me. That's perfectly okay. Obviously, red you get by doing these invasions. If you do the invasions, you have a chance of dropping the red lightsaber. But there's like, obviously there's like blue and yellow and purple and all that stuff. It's the colors you would expect. There's one that's really unique that is gradient, which means the blade goes from green to blue.
It doesn't
fucking exist in Star Wars, but it's a cool idea. They should totally steal that. That's a great idea.
Cool.
Yeah, the actual campaign was great, and then after it's just Destiny again.
Yeah,
there's nothing that's getting solved or extravagant or anything like that. It's just Destiny again. Like, that's the...
So how... The problem is that I'm talking to you about this, and it's Star Wars.
Yeah.
But, like, separated out from the Star Wars-ness of it, how do you feel about something like that coming into Destiny? Like, can you imagine if this was, like... I'm trying to think of an example that would make any sense. Like Dune, right? Like, what if there was like a Dune-inspired expansion?
So, like, I think so. The argument that you can draw with this that is a very, very good parallel that I can do.
Yeah,
where the thing that people are mad about in Magic: The Gathering right now is, go with me. It makes total sense. There is not new because it's been around for a while, but they're doubling down on it. This thing called Universes Beyond is. We are doing sets and magic that are not around the magic world.
Is this the same as Secret Lairs, or is that a different...
No, that's like a unique drop thing where it's supposed to be different. This is like full sets, where it's like, this is how you get the Final Fantasy set. There's a set that's just been released that's about Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Right, I remember
this
seeing
how
Avatar
you get
one.
That.
Yep.
This is how you get that stuff, is Universes Beyond.
Yep.
People are mad about it in Magic: The Gathering because they feel like it's overwriting the magic story, this thing that people have had for years, and you're not seeing the characters you like or developing story or anything like that. It's purely, we put this thing in Magic: The Gathering and it makes us money because people go, oh, it's the thing I like, and they buy the thing they like. Yeah. This is different, where it is, because it's inspired, the story still felt like a Destiny story.
Yeah.
You're still hitting the beats of, like, it's people dealing with the light and dark, and it's still all about, like, the Nine and learning about what the prophecy you were told at the end of Edge of Fate means, where you have to bind the Nine and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's still actively a Destiny story. It just has this sort of, like, Star Wars trapping around it, clothes around it.
Yeah.
I think that's fine. Like, the trapping around it where, like, the guns are thematic and there's, like, bits you point at being like, ah, oh, it's the thing or whatever. Mm. It's fine as long as it's still in world, and it is.
Sure.
It's still actively, very much actively in world. Don't mind it at all. But they've also said, actively have said now, we're not doing any more crossover stuff. Like, this was a one-off because we had the chance to work with Lucas.
Yeah, I mean, Star Wars shows up. Yeah, take it. Yeah. Fine. Okay,
I think what happened was that Lucas were like, they let them do the actual armor sets, and then... they basically went and be like, do you mind if we do this? They went, yeah, sure, sounds great.
Okay.
They don't plan on doing it. But I think they saw Lucas and took their shot and got it. Like, that's it. But they didn't ruin it. It's still in world. There's an awesome scene quite early on of Dredge and Bail and Arnor doing a lightsaber fight.
All right.
But it's a lightsaber fight in the Destiny world, so they are doing the lightsaber stuff with light and dark powers.
Nice.
So they're like throwing stasis bubbles at each other and like doing like radiant fireballs and all that stuff, and like it's awesome. That was the one where I looked at it and went, like, that's cooler than Star Wars, because the Star Wars stuff where it's like the lightsaber fights I like in Star Wars because they are very a lot of the time they're very grounded. It's a lot of like just sword combat, but they do the Jedi stuff where they push people and you're like, yeah, sure, that's cool because you can like pull people or whatever, but this chick is like throwing fireballs, this guy's like freezing parts of her body, so that's awesome. Like, that's a cool idea. But yeah, they don't plan on doing it again. I think it's fine. I don't have a problem
fair
with
enough
this. Like,
fair
it,
enough.
It seems okay.
Cool.
Even outside of the fact that it's me being like, oh, fucking lightsaber and Destiny, it's like they still told a Destiny story. I don't feel like it was overburdened or whatever. Like,
I think that's probably the thing that would piss people off the most, I think, especially with the way that they tried to establish the narrative in that game. Cool.
Yeah, okay, no, it's definitely 100% a Destiny story, and it'll have implications. Like, Dredge and Bail is still alive, and he'll obviously turn up later, so it's not like a one-off flash in the pan thing. They plan on using it later, I assume.
Cool.
Stuff still to come. There is a new dungeon that comes out in
two weeks,
something like that will... that'll be cool. I hope there are still enough people that I know playing this game that I get to do that, because that would be fun.
Dungeons are three-player, right?
Yeah, three-player. Yeah. Three-player at the difficulty of about a raid. You still do raid mechanics and stuff
Yeah.
But it's three-player.
Cool.
I thought it was fun. It's a fun expansion. Like, the campaign was really fun, and then it's just Destiny after it. So it's exactly what Dattle was talking about, where it's like, this isn't going to save the game. It's not going to set the world on fire. It'll be good, and then it'll be Destiny again. And it's that. Which it's a good campaign, and then it was Destiny. Yeah,
cool.
That's it.
Excellent.
They need to do, they obviously need to do more because people are still like not hype about the game. People are still pretty down about it.
Yeah. But
we'll see what happens in the future. But that's, yeah.
Cool. Very quickly, just when you were speaking there, just some like content update stuff from some of the stuff that I've been involved in. There's a new Hitman illicit target.
The M&M one.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, it's, well, I've not seen the level. I saw I saw the trailer. Okay. I've not seen the level yet.
The level is wilder than... It is one of the most insane levels they've ever done. It is, like, conceptually, thematically,
yeah, because it's,
all
because
over
it's
the place.
You and the real Eminem going to kill his alter ego. Yes. So I assume it's, like, weird and bizarre because that's kind of a stupid concept.
It's weird in ways you don't expect it to be. Like, we started playing it last night and it was like, oh, they're doing something with this. Okay, cool. Like, there are entire new mechanics in that thing that you've never seen before. It's wild. It's really, really good.
I need to look it up.
Yeah.
Someone will have played it.
Someone will have played it. So it's that. And then there's the new Diablo season starts next week as well. And we got to the point where we wanted to get to. So we have the fox and it's all good. But I will say the Citadel, Dark Citadel, which is like one of the things in the game, is probably the best content I think I've seen so far, which does have like actual like raid style combat mechanics where there's like, here's a puzzle, figure it out. It was actually pretty fun to figure out what was going on in there. Once you actually can hold your own, solving the puzzle is actually pretty fun.
Yeah, raid puzzles are fun. They're a cool thing.
Turns out. So very quickly, turn through some of the news since last time. I've only got a couple of things here. We haven't done this since the Steam Machine stuff got announced. Or Steam Box. Steam, what the fuck's it called? Steam Box?
It's just the Steam Box, isn't it?
Steam Box.
Steam Machine.
Yeah, it's the Steam Machine.
Steam Box is what I wanted to be called. I wanted it to be called because, like, Orange Box, like, it's a...
Because they were originally called Steam Boxes, but back in the day,
Steam Machine.
First time they tried that. I mean, everyone here will have seen it. But yeah, they announced the Steam Box coming next year, early next year, they said, is a roughly 6-inch cube that is 5 times more powerful than a Steam Deck and runs SteamOS, so will run the same games that the Deck can. It's kind of cool. Everything I've seen from people who have had hands-on have said, no, this thing is actually really, really good. It's a way for people to buy a box that plays more games than they can get on a console.
Yeah. It's a machine that lets them interact with the Steam user interface, which
is
a lot of video games, yeah.
And it solves the console problem of, like, I just want it to fucking work. Like, yeah, that's what SteamOS does.
That is exactly the sort of situation that I want for my partner.
I remember you were saying
have her build or me build a computer if I can just get her a thing that is like, here's a thing that I will know will run 90% of stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
That's it, yeah.
And I think this kind of step is the other thing that will maybe push the last few, because there's a couple of still big games that don't run on Steam Decks because of like anti-cheat and stuff like that.
I
imagine this will be the thing that does it. It's a real nice looking piece of kit as well. It's cool. So then there's that, the new Steam controller, which seems pretty decent. Like everyone I've read that's put their hands on it says it is way, way more comfortable than it looks. So that's cool. And then the Steam Frame, which is their new VR headset, which depending on what it is.
It's called the Steam Frame.
Steam Frame, yes.
Oh, okay.
Sure. Depending on what it is and the price point and all of that kind of stuff, I would probably sell my Quest for this. Mainly because it solves the wireless problem in a very Valve way, where if you want to stream wireless VR from your PC to a Quest headset. You can do that over Wi-Fi. Like, it supports that out of the box.
Yeah.
And also Steam have their own streaming thing for headsets, which is about the same performance. It's maybe a little bit better, but again, only works with Steam games. But the problem is that it's going over Wi-Fi, right? It's just going over your home network. And like, my PC and my my Quest are reasonably close to my router. Like, I don't have that big a place, but it's distant enough where it drops. The quality is not as great as just plugging in with a cable, all of this kind of stuff. So it's not great. So it's fine for most things, but like, if I'm playing something kind of intense or really like graphically rich, I'll plug a cable in and do that.
Yeah.
The Frame has solved this problem because it comes with a dongle that you plug into your PC, and the dongle generates its own 6 gigahertz Wi-Fi signal that is purely for the headset. So that immediately solves that entire problem, like, in one fell swoop. Like, if they sold that for the Quest, like, you can get something that's kind of this for the Quest already. It's like a third party thing that has mixed reviews, that works great for some people and doesn't work at all for others. But like, this totally solves that problem. And then also, like, the headset itself is like lighter and better and all this kind of stuff. So
yeah. Lighter would be kind of key. I think, I still think the headsets are still like, well, I don't know, because I've only got the one that you gave me. They still feel a bit like forward heavy. It's still
the Quest 3 is cooling, but unusable unless you have a better head, a better strap. Because it's so front heavy.
Oh yeah, you bought that third party strap.
I had to buy a third party one just to make it not like hurt my neck. But yeah, so all that Steam stuff, that's super cool. I am fascinated to see the pricing for the machine and the Frame. The machine, they are talking about pricing it like a PC as opposed to like a console. But
yeah,
like, when you're sitting looking at the PS5 Pro, which is still like £700, I think, at this point, like,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You throw that.
It depends on like the spec of the machine, right? Because if it's comparative, then it's,
I mean, like,
it's more of like, if you spend £700 on it, is it the same as if you would spend £700 on like a pre-built or something you build yourself, right? Is that
Like £700 that can play 4K60 is like unheard of, right? Like,
yeah,
you're not doing that. So, and again, you have to take into account like the ease of use and the less maintenance, and like, that is a value add for a lot of people.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there is a value statement of, like we said, where it's just like, here's a thing, you know, it works. It's just like a console, except there's a PC.
I think this might be the thing that, like, I think there might be another console essentially on like in the run. Like, I think it's this.
Yeah, it's Valve enter that space. Then, yeah.
And the Switch. I think these are the consoles at this point.
Yeah, because Microsoft are sort of, have they said this, or are they just kind of like sort of backing out? And
Microsoft are in a weird fucking place right now. Like,
they have been for a while.
But now they're just like, they're just kind of not talking about it. And it's, be weird.
So, yeah, and to be honest, if they had it, they've got all the studios and stuff now because they bought all of them.
Yeah.
If you just like, back off of selling consoles, which are like, you sell at a loss anyway.
Yeah.
And license out Game Pass to people. You could probably make a fucking killing off of that. Like, you probably,
I mean,
do it really. You'd have to figure it out, obviously, but you would, if you just go to them and be like, hey, we'll let you have Game Pass on your platform for X billions of pounds. Like, it's.
I mean, Game Pass even then is not the deal that it once was.
No, not anymore. Yeah, it's worse now.
For players, for developers, even, like, the deals that people used to get for Game Pass apparently are not happening anymore and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, Microsoft at this point might be happy enough to just, like, sell Game Pass and then go back to selling fucking compute for people. Who knows? Like, it's. Microsoft's in a really weird place right now in the games market. So three other things very quickly. There's a team who are trying to bring back Concord, which I just thought was kind of interesting.
Okay, sure.
They're basically trying to make a third-party server infrastructure to let people play Concord. They've rebuilt the back end to create new servers and officially played a match of the game once thought lost to time. That video is now gone as I now look at it, which is interesting. I don't know if it's been pulled. I don't know what's happening with it, but this was a thing that people are trying to do. I think that's great. I think it's cool that people go in and, like, regardless of what the game is, like, going in to get it playable, I think is useful. Even just for preservation stuff.
Yeah, for game preservation, for, yeah, just being able to say that it's there, totally, yeah, fine. Yep. That's...
I have a thing that I think we were going to see more of in the future, because I've seen it at least twice now. So do you remember the Subnautica 2 debacle that was going on where...
The company... Yeah, the, like, company split or whatever that ended up with a weird situation.
Their publisher... Crafton basically fired the head of a couple of the heads of the studio. Because they said they weren't doing the job. The heads of the studio were like, hey, they owe us a bunch of money that they didn't want to pay us, all this kind of stuff. So I'm just going to read from, this is from PC Gamer. Pre-trial brief filed by the lawyers representing the ousted former heads of Subnautica 2 studio Unknown Worlds alleged that Crafton CEO Changham Kim was, quote, desperate to avoid paying the bonuses required by the acquisition contract because of the, quote, professional embarrassment that would result from the perception that he was overpaid, that he overpaid for the studio. So that's one part of it, which is like, oh shit, we paid too much money. We now also don't want to give them the bonuses because it will make me personally look bad. Cool. So this is the bit I actually wanted to get to. Where is the thing? Oh God, where was it? It's in here somewhere. Okay, so yeah, this is pre-brief trial. The pre-brief claims that Crafton's head of corporate development, Maria Park, told Kim that Crafton would likely have to pay the earnout if sales targets were achieved, even if the studio heads were dismissed with cause. At that point, the CEO, quote, turned to artificial intelligence to help him brainstorm ways to avoid paying the earnout, the filing claims.
Yes,
quote,
I remember this.
ChatGPT likewise advised that it would be difficult to cancel the earnout. I hope that if AI gives us absolutely nothing, which it looks like it's not, that it gives us a bunch of CEOs going, how do I hide the bodies? What is the most efficient way to hire my criminal, to hide my criminal dealings? Like, just writing it into the big
it's wild, yeah,
thing in the sky, like, it is so funny. Especially because, like, Crafton, one of the things that really pissed people off with Crafton recently, because they own a bunch of stuff at this point, was like, oh no, we're also an AI first studio. It's like, what the fuck does that mean? And by that it means like, hey, how do I swindle these people out of money? ChatGPT.
Yeah.
If that's what you mean.
AI first means that I've asked the AI how to run my company, and it's, yeah, that's
fucking
the...
so good. Like, it's, oh, oh, it's beautiful. I imagine we're gonna see a lot of that. I imagine we're gonna see a lot of CEOs who have already tripled down on this thing be asking ChatGPT how to hide the bodies.
I think this is just the first time it's been made public. There's no way that it's not already been used like 10, 15 times in the world. But yeah,
100%. It's great. Because I mean, there was a story just yesterday, I think, that one of the image generating models leaked a bunch of the output images, which was just like a bunch of like non-consensual pornography and stuff like that. Like, These things are built so quickly that security is not a priority. So all of these chat logs will just leak, and it'll be excellent. It'll be great. Speaking of AI, but more included this because it is one of the best headlines I've ever fucking seen from Aftermath. Quote: Ubisoft, face covered in bruises, once again confidently extends foot towards end of Rake.
Yeah. Fantastic,
it's
absolutely
fantastic. So good.
Nailed that headline, yeah, absolutely fantastic.
Basically, the story itself is that Ubisoft have announced this thing called Teammates, which is a, quote, playable generative AI research project which explores how AI can be used to deepen the player experience through real-time voice commands and enhanced gameplay. It's basically you have two teammates you can talk to be like, hey, go over there. It's a research project. They're not making a game, or as far as they know, they're not making a game. But like, This Aftermath article, which will be linked in the post, is like, here's a timeline of all the weird shit that Ubisoft have tried over the years that was just like so bad. Like, do you remember when they sold NFTs as a thing called Ubisoft Quartz?
Yeah.
Do you remember when they tried to go into the metaverse? Do you remember their crypto-backed marketplace for Champions Tactics? They're just, oh, It's just so bad. And then the final thing, which ties into something I was going to do anyway, it's been a interesting week for Santa Ragione. Is that the, I can't remember. It's an Italian studio. But they have made games like Wheels of Aurelia and Mediterranean Inferno, which are kind of well-respected indie games. They put out, or were about to put out, a game called Horses, which is have you not seen this?
I don't think so.
Okay,
well,
so
I can remember.
Horses has been on my radar for a little bit. It is a psychological horror game that has a very, very, very strange looking trailer.
Okay.
I'm trying to see, does this article have a...
Is it more strange than the one that you sent me the other day that was just called like About Fishing or whatever?
Yes.
Is that the...
Yes, yes. It's a very different type of game.
I'll look up this trailer.
Don't look up on Steam, because it doesn't exist there anymore. So the pulled.
I've seen like reviews and stuff, but that's
I'll send you. I've got the actual page.
Steam is banning indie game Horses. Sure. I assume this is what you're about to tell me.
This is what I'm about to talk about. So here's the itch.io page for it. So basically, this game was due to come out last week, and Steam pulled it last minute. Oh, they didn't pull it last minute. They were unable to get it certified to go on the platform. Then Epic Games Store pulled it like 24 hours before launch, I think. And as far as I know, at time of recording, it's still not there. And so it's Itch, it's GOG, and one other place you can get it that I can't remember right now. But basically, it's... So the whole point of it is, I'll read from the Aftermath article here. So this is from the Aftermath article. Horses, according to the studio, originally included a scene that Valve construed as depicting, quote, sexual conduct involving a minor. While Valve did not provide exact details when it first reviewed an early version of the game in 2023, the studio suspects that Steam Steward took issue with the moment in which a man and a daughter visit a farm where the horse... Not spoilers because it's part of the trailer. The horses in this game are people in horse masks.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So, again, from the studio. So the studio has a FAQ, which I'm reading from now. The daughter wants to ride one of the horses, and in the game, the horses are humans wearing a horse mask, and gets to pick which one reads a FAQ about the situation. What followed is an interactive dialogue sequence where the player is leading by lead as if they were a horse, a naked adult woman with a young girl on her shoulders. The scene is not sexual in any way, but it is possible that this juxtaposition is what triggered the flag. The studio goes on to say then that it's since changed the character in the scene to be a 20-something woman, quote, to both avoid the juxtaposition and, more importantly, because the dialogue delivered in that scene, which deals with the societal structure of the world in horses, worked much better when delivered by an older character. So they were very clear about the original thing. They were like, fine, they changed it because they thought it was better for the game anyway. And it was not enough, and Valve have said they are not listing the game. I want to play this thing, like, really badly.
Sure.
Partially because of all of this, partially because I've seen a bunch of people play it. It was like, actually, it's not, like, it's nowhere near as bad as, like, if you were just read the stories, like, it's nowhere near as bad as it actually is. It's actually kind of tame in a bunch, if you excuse the pun. In a bunch of other areas, but also like it's just such an interesting, unique looking thing.
Trailer does look really fucking weird. So,
it's really fucking weird. I played a little bit of Mediterranean Inferno, which again is a really weird looking kind of visual novel, which kind of has like psychological horror aspects to it, kind of. But I need to know what this thing is. But it's interesting that this is a game that has got controversy, but didn't want it in the first place, as opposed to like Postal or like the original
trying to do this.
Like they were just like, no, we're making a thing. But anyway, the point of this whole thing, which I think is covered in this Aftermath article that'll be listed, is like Steam actually doesn't. This is the problem with stuff like Steam. Is that because they have such a monopoly on the market, one, this is really affecting the studio. Like, the studio might actually go out of business because they can't sell their game that they've been working on for a long time. Yes. They've talked about, like, we're financially fucked if this doesn't, like, make it out. And two, like, Steam can take one look at this thing and go, no. And they're not particularly interested in games like this, which would be considered more, like, kind of artistic pieces or conceptual pieces or that kind of stuff. Like, Steam can just turn around and be like, no. And that's it. Like, they're, again, from the headline of this thing, Steam is for products, not art. Like, that is the whole point of this thing. So yes, I will play it and see what it is. I need to know.
Glad someone will.
But yeah, it's worth a look if you're like kind of psychological horror stuff, which is interesting. So that's everything, I think. Like I say, Skate Stories out, which is the last thing I need to play for the end of the year. And then we will be back in January with Game of the Year. So we're taking the December to actually play a bunch of stuff. Because I think if we're to do it now, there'd be enough stuff that we've kind of missed out on that it wouldn't be fair.
I genuinely think I could do
it. You think you could do it right now?
I don't think there's anything else I need to play.
But we're gonna take the time anyway. We take December off normally anyway. For the holidays. So we'll be back in January with Game of the Year. Is there anything else? I think that's everything. Yeah, I think that's everything. How do I normally start this? GameInterstore.com is the name of the website where you can find all videos, articles, and podcasts are up there. You can go to youtube.com/GameInterstore, subscribe there, get notified when we put new videos up. We are on Blue Sky and Facebook at this point, I think, are the only ones that are still going. If you subscribe there, you can follow our stuff. And that podcast@GameInterstore is the email address if you want to get in touch. And that is us. Stay safe. Have a good Christmas. Have a good holiday. Have a good whatever it is you celebrate over December. And we will see you in January. Goodbye.
Goodbye.